Hello and welcome to Comment. I'm Roshan Mohammed Saleh, standing in for George Galloway this week. Wherever you are, I want your calls on +44 208 601 4555. Alternatively, you can SMS me on +44 780 008 066, or you can email me at comment@presstv.co.uk. On today's show, our main topics will be the political situation in Syria and Egypt. Syria remains the number one news story in the world, with a devastating civil war there claiming well over 100,000 lives, according to the United Nations. In fact, it's cost so many lives on both sides of the political divide that the UN has stopped counting. Ahead of the much-heralded Syrian peace talks in Switzerland next week, the Syrian Arab Army definitely has the upper hand on the ground and is advancing towards Aleppo. Meanwhile, the insurgents, which include elements of Al-Qaeda, have started to fight each other and seem to be in complete disarray. At the start of the Syrian uprising, many expressed sympathy for the protesters. But as the war has become more militarized and bloody, and as foreign powers have begun to dictate events in Syria, now many people are changing their minds. Have you done so? Let me know by calling the number on the screen below or by getting in touch with us via the details that you can see. Personally, I think there's no military solution to this conflict, and all sides need to come to the negotiating table to put an end to a war in which every side will lose if it continues. What's the point of fighting a war you can't win? Absolutely no point. What's the point in destroying a country in the hope of a victory that will never come? What's the point in giving Israel and the West what they want? Chaos in the Arab world. And what's the point of Arabs and Muslims fighting each other when they should be doing everything they can to defend themselves against their real enemies, the illegitimate so-called state of Israel and anyone who backs her, directly or indirectly? If you agree with me, give me a call. And if you don't agree with me, also give me a call and we can argue it out. Meanwhile, Egyptians have just been voting on a referendum on a new constitution. The turnout is reported to be around 37%, and the result is a foregone conclusion because opposition parties have boycotted the vote. The vote comes a few months after the military coup in Egypt, which overthrew Muslim Brotherhood President Mohamed Morsi. Muslim Brotherhood supporters say the vote is a farce and will only entrench military dictatorship. But the army says it will seal its popular legitimacy, and many analysts feel it will pave the way for Egyptian military leader Abdel Fattah al-Sisi to become president. Personally, I feel that the military in Egypt may well be radicalizing vast swathes of the population by outlawing the Muslim Brotherhood and storing up problems for the future. It may be too much to ask, but I would like to see all parties in Egypt coexisting rather than trying to wipe each other out. Ultimately, chaos in Egypt only benefits Israel again. So our main two topics tonight are Egypt and Syria, but I'm also prepared to take calls on anything else you wish to speak about, and we'll prioritize your call if you disagree with me. So let's go to our first caller, who I hope will be on the line very soon. As I say, our topics tonight are Syria and Egypt, and I believe our first caller is there. He is Bashir. I'm not sure where he's calling from. You're in the UK. Bashir, go ahead.
Yeah. All right, Mr. Galloway. I believe the situation in Egypt at the moment is the same situation as Hosni Mubarak did many years ago, and the military are trying to take over and keep control, and all with the backing of United States as the UN. They got the largest base in the Middle East, in Egypt, and it's all a conspiracy, it's all a coup to ousted. As they were saying, they wanted to... The new proposal that they were approved or trying to approve by getting the votes is because they want religion, nothing to do with the religion in the constitution.
Yes, Bashir. I mean, I was in Egypt a few months ago, just after the military coup happened. And it was strange. It's a very divided country. On the one hand, you have many, many Muslim Brotherhood supporters, and later many were massacred in Rabaa al-Adawiyah in Cairo. And they constitute perhaps 20 to 30% of the population. I'm not 100% sure, but around that figure. But you also have vast swathes of the population who don't like the Muslim Brotherhood. It's a very, very divided divided country. As for the West's position on all this, I think they're slightly confused, because ultimately they did get on quite well with the Muslim Brotherhood when they were in power. The Muslim Brotherhood didn't seem to be kind of conflicting with their interests. They went along with the peace treaty with Israel. They weren't threatening the West's economic interests. But at the same time, obviously, the West funds the Egyptian army. So I think the West is in two minds here. But I also get the feeling that ultimately it was a military coup and nothing really ever changed. You know, Hosni Mubarak might have been toppled, but ultimately the regime stayed in place. Is that what you believe, Bashir?
I believe that 100%, but what I don't understand is when the people protested against Morsi once he was elected legally, democratically, in a neutral, in a fair election, he was elected. But when all the people opposed him and the military stepped in, why? What about when the 3 million people opposed that new regime, the military? Why wasn't the international law intervening then? Why couldn't anybody step in and say, look, it was a fair election, he won, and by right, you have no powers legally to remove him? So the military had no power, no rights to do that anyway in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think most people will agree that Mohamed Morsi should not have been toppled in the way he was. I think that left a very bitter taste in the mouth. But if you go to Egypt, many people will disagree with that. They will say, ultimately, the Muslim Brotherhood was taking the country on to paving the way for a civil war, in fact. They say that they were incompetent and literally the economy completely tanked during their year in power. But it's interesting to note that you know, the Muslim Brotherhood were held to a very high standard when they were in power, and many people criticize them for their lack of achievements. But not many, you know, the fact is, since, you know, the military coup happened a few months ago now, what exactly has the Egyptian military done to improve the economic welfare of the people? They don't seem to have done much themselves, yet they're not being held to the same standard as the Muslim Brotherhood. Bashir?
Yeah, they are not doing nothing at all. The military is not doing nothing for the public, regardless whether they wanted to remove Morsi or not. But the people that wanted the military to take remove Morsi, they even, most of them, are regretting it now, because financially the country is not benefiting in any way.
Yes, well, I mean, obviously the Egyptian military basically economically controls the country. They have a massive stake in the country. A lot of the generals are billionaires, and the businessmen affiliated to them are billionaires. But, you know, it's actually a very worrying situation in Egypt. I think that, you know, it doesn't look good. You have people fighting each other, and groups that are very entrenched, very polarized, and really what the Arab world needs is a strong Egypt. Egypt has always been the center of the Arab world, and what you have now is a chaotic situation there with not much hope for the future, and it really is worrying. Thanks a lot, Bashir, for your call. We have somebody else on the line now. Farida in London. Please go ahead. What would you like to say, Farida?
Good evening, Mr. Salih.
Good evening.
I, as a Muslim, I've got a very strong feeling that as an ummah, as a community, is there any chance of saying that we have turned into a nation of schizophrenics?
Why'd you say that, a nation of schizophrenics? What makes you say that?
Because I find myself being pulled in all different directions. For years we have been fed the so-called Western democratic principles. And we find ourselves in situations when the Arab so-called spring started. We were so hopeful that we were going to get onto the bandwagon and become part of the world community. And as the events have unfolded, Mr. Salih, I'm getting very mixed up emotions about this whole agenda.
Has the conflict in Syria influenced your mixed up feelings?
Because when you see a Muslim fighting another Muslim brother for whatever reason, whether it is Al-Qaeda, whether it is Bashar Assad's own troops, we look into Egypt and we see the Muslim Brotherhood against the army there. You look almost anywhere in the Muslim world now, and I think we are very, very confused. We don't seem to have, with Iran coming back into the fold now, is there any possibility that the Muslims all over the world will have one consensus saying we want to be part of this global village.
Yes.
But who is going to determine the actual agenda?
Well, I mean, obviously the old saying goes, united we stand, divided we fall. I mean, I think if you look back at Islamic history, we've never been completely united, have we, ever? But at least we can stop fighting each other. That would be a good start. As you say, the Arab Spring, we were all quite hopeful, pro-Western dictators in Egypt and Tunisia being toppled. And then it kind of started to go wrong, didn't it, with the NATO invasion of Libya, the NATO bombing of Libya, the lack of progress. In Bahrain, and then really the Arab Spring, people call it the Arab Spring, others call it the Islamic Awakening, but it seems to have been well and truly buried, in my opinion, in Syria, where it's completely been derailed. I mean, I think I was reading the Yinon plan. It was an Israeli military intelligence expert wrote something in 1982, and his plan basically, Israel's plan, was to divide the Arab world into ethnicities and sects, and get everyone fighting each other to destroy countries like Iraq, get the Kurds, the Sunnis, the Shias into different groups, the same in Lebanon, the same in Syria. And that plan seems to be being enacted out. And I think ultimately we have to keep our eye on the big picture here, because ultimately if we're fighting each other, we can't fight our enemies. And that is a certain path to defeat and humiliation. Farida, what say you?
I say, Mr. Saleh, if the Muslims cannot, for whatever reason, learn from our past history, and they cannot see that this divide and rule policy has worked time and time again. It has been used against us. But we seem to be so oblivious of the historical events that have gone in the past. Why can't we learn? Why can't we say to ourselves, look, we'll put whatever differences we might have, put them aside. And like you said, divided, we are going to fall unless we get our act together.
Yes. I mean, the Iraq War only happened about 10 years ago, or a bit more than 10 years ago, when a foreign invasion basically destroyed the country. Yet still we have Arabs and Muslims calling on the West and Western nations who have proven time and time again to be the enemies of Arabs, the enemies of Muslims, calling on these nations to interfere in our affairs. That is absolutely unbelievable, in my opinion, that any Arab or any Muslim can think that any Western nation, with the track record they have, can do anything good for the Arab world that has the best interests of the Arab world at heart. It's scarcely believable. Yet we still accept money from them. We still accept guns from them. We still ask for NATO invasions. Really, we have to grow up and display more maturity. Farida, I'll give you a last word.
Sometimes I really feel that perhaps are we lacking in intelligence? Or are we so short-sighted that we can only look for, little bands to put over our gaping holes and think that it's going to work? It's not going to work unless we get together and say we have one definite agenda. And when you use the word Islam, please, please, please get the right message across and not of extremism, please.
Okay. Thank you very much, Farida, for that call. I think many of our viewers will think you made a lot of sense there. We have another caller online. We have Mohammed in the UK, and Mohammed wants to talk about Egypt. Mohammed, go ahead.
Yeah, George, how are you?
I'm fine, alhamdulillah. Thank you very much. How are you?
Okay, you're most welcome. Alhamdulillah, I'm very well. All right, so first of all, I really appreciate the topics which you really choose at this moment. And secondly, I just want to mention one thing about the fighting which is going around at this moment in Egypt. So far, what to my least understanding and to my least knowledge, what I've got until now is to stop the war there, it's not a hard task for the unions there. It's not a hard task. Like, for example, America or other forces, what they all could do is just have a meeting, roundtable conference, you might say, or discuss the person, the Assad main person, instead of bombarding onto the Egypt, which they were planning before, which they have not get done so. The second thing is, the people are having a right of democracy, and they should be having a right to choose openly to whomsoever they want to. But in reality, nothing is being done for these people what all the people, the forces around the world, I don't want to point them out, what they really mean is, let them fight at initial stage, the people, the Muslims in Egypt. What afterwards they're going to do is just bombard on all of Egypt and kill everyone. This is a solution which I have found so far. That they will say, this weapon has been used in Egypt, in this manner this has been used, so we're going to kill that person, rather to arrest, because the technology is very high in this period. They could get straightway popped yes. into that country and just could arrest the person.
Yes, Mohammed, your line wasn't completely clear. I think I got the gist of what you were saying about democracy in Egypt. I mean, I think personally my own feeling is that, I'm not trying to defend totalitarianism or dictatorship here, but I think democracy, as is proved by Iraq, is not the first step. It's a stage which comes after stability, and it's a stage that comes after where a society is stable, where a society is cohesive, where bread is in people's bellies. I think we have learned from the last few years of recent history that people care less about putting votes in a ballot box than having empty stomachs, and of course democracy in the sense of fairness is something that we should all aspire to, but first of all I would like to see the Arab people and the Muslim people not fighting each other and creating stable societies, cohesive societies, and then inshallah those societies will develop into mature democracies. Thank you very much, Mohammed, for your call. We have Behrouz now in Nottingham, and I think Behrouz, you want to speak about Syria. We're asking the question about whether your views on the Syria crisis have matured in the last few years as the conflict has become more bloody, more militarized, and has bogged down into an effective stalemate. Behrouz, go ahead.
Yes, basically I'd just like to talk about the Syria conflict, and basically what I think is going on there is fundamentally...
Behrouz, I can't hear you very well. If you could raise your voice a bit, please.
Yes, basically I'd just like to say that what I think is going on in Syria right now, it's a model as to what the United States implemented in Latin America in the 1980s. Of course, then they were financing all the death squads, and it was, of course, the main operations were run under by a gentleman by the name of John Negroponte. And then Negroponte, of course, turned up in Iraq, where they were very much implementing the same death squad model there. Anybody who opposed the American dominance of the region, the American occupation of the region, was very much taken out by all these death squads that they were financing.
So who are the death squads in Syria?
One of Negroponte's main assistant there was a gentleman called Robert Ford, and Robert Ford is now the main American ambassador to Syria. And I think what you're seeing there is very much the main death squads. What they're seeing there is the Al-Qaeda model, which is very much what they're implementing. Whereas in the 1980s in Latin America, where they'd say just kill communists, just kill trade unionists, now they're saying pretty much kill everybody. And I think the reason they're doing that is they're trying to foment a civil war, because they want to sabotage. There's a £10 billion South Pars gas pipeline Syria has with Iran, and I think that's very much their main implement.
But Behrouz, are you saying that Al-Qaeda is directly financed and directed by Western powers?
Yes, I do.
What's your proof of that, Behrouz?
Well, I think if you go back to, you look back at the history of false flag terror, I believe personally that 9/11 was set up. They do it to invade Cuba back in 1962 under what is known as Operation North Woods. This is a document that we know now as a result of the Freedom of Information Act, and I think very much that's very what they're doing there. Because if you look at what's going on in Syria, most of the deaths, they're not being committed by Assad or the Syrian army. It's being committed by the death squads, the Al-Qaeda death squads, and it's a German publication called the Frankfurter Zeitung, which is actually genuinely considered to be a fairly conservative publication, and they've done a study about this and shows that the majority of the deaths being caused there, it's not Assad, it's not the Syrian army, it's the death squads there, which is very much being implemented by the United States.
I mean, Behrouz, I mean, I've as a journalist, I've followed Al-Qaeda's trajectory over many years now, and at the beginning I think a lot of Arabs and Muslims and even non-Muslims even kind of sympathized, not with their methods, but with their ideology to a certain extent their grievances, rather, because they felt that Al-Qaeda was fighting the West. But in the last 10 years or so, especially with the advent of the conflict in Iraq, Al-Qaeda has definitely diverted its attention away from fighting the West to fighting Muslims and killing Muslims. They don't seem to be fighting Israel very much, do they? They don't seem to be fighting America very much. Instead, they're fighting the Shia, and they're massacring the Shia. And surely that is a complete a reversal of Osama bin Laden's original aims.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, like I just said to you, personally, I believe that 9/11 in itself was set up, and I think Al-Qaeda has traditionally been a proxy of the West, where they've used to carry out false flag terror, and they've genuinely, as they're now currently using as a proxy, to very much destabilise member states that they consider to be a threat to them. So, I mean, you look back, like I said, in history, they were going to do this to invade Cuba back in 62 under what was known as Operation North Woods. And, I mean, you have to look at the overall facts. They spent $100 million in America investigating whether Bill Clinton's actions with Monica Lewinsky. They've only spent $4 million investigating the 9/11 itself.
Well, I mean, personally, I think the jury's still out on whether Al-Qaeda has a direct relationship with the West. But I think it is very clear that they have an indirect relationship with the West, in the sense, if you look at Libya, what happened in Libya and what happened in Syria, they're effectively on the same side as the West and Israel in those wars. They might not be working hand in glove, but they're pursuing the same aims, namely the fall of Gaddafi and now the fall of Assad. And ultimately, Al-Qaeda is a two-bit operation. You know, they're not an organization which can build. They're an operation which can destroy. They have never shown in any inclination to actually construct any state or any institutions. Rather, they go around causing chaos, and I think that's what the West wants. So I would say that Al-Qaeda has become an indirect tool of the West when it wants to destabilize countries which oppose its policies. Thank you very much, Behrouz. That was a very enlightening call. But I'm going to have to move on because we have another caller on the line, Nana in London. And Nana wants to speak about Syria and Egypt. Go ahead, Nana.
Oh, hello. Good evening.
Good evening.
About Syria, they thought that it would be an easy cake like in Libya, but Bashar resisted and stood up long enough for the truth to come out, with all the manipulation and propaganda lies of Al Arabiya TV and Al Jazeera, who will soon dethrone Fox News and Friends, you know, in the chart of lies. So now Bashar did what Gaddafi has been dreaming of, you know, which is cleaning the country of the criminals, beat, beat, zanga, zanga, I quote him, which means house by house, Ali by Ali. And I'm very glad that Iraq is following Syria in the beat, beat, zanga, zanga cleaning. I'm really glad, and I hope it's going to be another domino effect, and every country will take responsibility with the help with their of their people to get rid of these mercenaries mixed with stupid and naive thinking of themselves jihadis, and I don't know, to eat the heart of a person like that or do something that horrible, you must be on real, real hard drugs or something.
Yeah, I mean, Nana, I think there's no doubt that the Syrian Arab army with their allies, Russia, Iran is backing them, of course, as well, and so is Hezbollah backing them on the ground in certain places. They've definitely got the upper hand on the battlefield now. The momentum is all with them, and the rebels are now, or the insurgents are fighting each other, and they seem to be in complete disarray. However, I think this is far from over. As long as Turkey keeps that border open, as long as Qatar and Saudi keep the finances coming, then this isn't over yet.
Turkey is making the biggest mistake ever. They don't know that they are aimed next. They don't know that the aim of the chaos is to Turkey and that powerful country there. at the end, it's going to be them who will get all these mercenaries running to their direction, them and Jordan, because if Lebanon is blocking from one side and getting rid of them, and Syria is getting rid of them, and Iraq is getting rid of them, and Iran is getting rid of them, and soon you'll hear Pakistan and Afghanistan getting rid of them, they will all converge to their home, which is Turkey. Turkey is known to be in the secret societies and in the secret realm. They are known to be the platform of distribution of arms and weapons.
You're making interesting points, Nana, but I'm going to have to wrap it up now because we have to go into a short break. But we'll be back in a few minutes to talk about Egypt and Syria again and anything else that's on your mind. So please stay tuned for more topical discussion on Comments. Welcome back to Comment. I'm Roshan Mohammed Saleh. We've been having a lively discussion about the political situations in Egypt and Syria. So without further ado, I'd like to get back to you and your calls. And we have Max, who is in California, all the way over in the USA, and he wants to talk about Egypt. Go ahead, Max.
Hi, nice to see you. I think you're my second favorite after George. Good job. I wanted to discuss one thing in general and then specifically Egypt. I think we cannot afford to be willingly naive about what's going on throughout the Middle East. And Egypt, I keep hearing that it was a fair and free election. It was not. Mohamed Morsi was presented with one other previous regime candidate. That's not a free election. You have two choices, and obviously people don't want to choose the Mubarak guy. So we cannot be – this whole thing, to me – is a complete Mohamed Morsi was in the pocket of the U.S. and in Israel from day one.
Did you support the coup, Max?
No, I don't. Initially, after 2 months after the initial revolution started in Egypt, I knew that what their plan was is to completely exhaust the Egyptian people to the point that all they want is security, and that's exactly what's happening. Both sides are playing each other. Both sides are in the pockets of the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, my impression, I was in Egypt a few months ago. My impression, I think it's slightly unfair to say Mohamed Morsi was in the pocket of the U.S., but certainly the U.S. being...
He was trying to recruit fighters for Syria. He was basically doing everything that anybody else in charge in Egypt would do. I mean, he wasn't doing anything for... what did he do that wasn't...
Did he have much room for maneuver, Max, given his political position?
Well, that's the point. I mean, the regime never changed. I mean, there has been no revolution.
And what do you think about this current vote that's happening now? What is the significance of it? Will it bring any stability to the nation?
No, absolutely not. That's what this is exactly where it's going. They're exhausting the people to the point that all they want is security, and they're never going to get the revolution until they wake up and see exactly what's happening.
And perhaps only a dictator can bring that security. Is that what you're trying to say?
No, not at all. What I'm trying to say is a revolution has to be a real revolution. You cannot have people still in charge from the old thing and then just have a puppet saying that I'm the new leader, I'm the new president, when the real core of the whole regime has not changed. It's not a real revolution. It has not changed. They're just exhausting the people to the point where they're going to say, all we want is security, and it's already happening.
So yeah, I mean, I must admit, I have to agree with you, Max. Trying to play devil's advocate there, but with great difficulty, because I think what you said was ultimately correct, that both sides are checkmated to a certain extent by the West. Perhaps the Egyptian army is a very strong institution and therefore can have a greater degree of independence than the Muslim Brotherhood, which ultimately doesn't have the same kind of financial and military backing. But let's, you know, not a very kind of optimistic view of the future there in Egypt. But thanks again, Max, for your call all the way from the USA. Now, back to the UK, I believe. We have Lamine, I'm hoping that I'm pronouncing that correctly, Lamine in Leeds, who also wants to speak about Egypt and whether the Egyptian vote will bring stability. Lamine, go ahead. Perhaps we've lost that call from Leeds. Lamine, are you there? Yeah, well, I mean, so far we've been talking about Syria and Egypt, and both countries in complete chaos at the moment, especially Syria. We have the Geneva conference happening next week in Syria, which I'm going to. I think a lot of people feel that that won't bring any stability to the nation. Ultimately, the opposition doesn't seem to want to attend those talks, and it's in complete disarray. And therefore, even if they do attend the talks, what kind of legitimacy will they have when the Western-backed opposition, the Syrian National Council, has no authority on the ground? It's more the Islamists, the Al-Qaeda types that do. I believe we have another caller now. Maysoon in Surrey, which is also in the UK, for those of you watching outside the UK, and Maysoon wants to speak about Syria and Egypt, I believe. Maysoon, go ahead.
Yes, hello, good evening, Roshan.
Good evening.
When we discuss the Middle East, including Syria and Egypt, you have to talk about Israel's involvement, and you have to talk about the Oded Yenon plan, which they had to split up the Middle East. Unfortunately, the trouble with us in the Middle East, all the Muslim countries in the Middle East, our Achilles heel is the fact that the Zionists have been able to utilize and exploit our weaknesses with respect to our ridiculous sectarianism and also our tribalism, which you can see in parts of Iraq and Afghanistan. I'm actually very upset about what's going on in the Middle East. All the countries that I spent my childhood in the Middle East, have been bombed to smithereens by the West. And it is Israeli-occupied United States that is doing all these war crimes on behalf of Israel. And I actually, if you don't mind me saying this to you, Roshan, I'm actually quite shocked and amazed that you still believe in this Al-Qaeda myth. Al-Qaeda, even Hillary Clinton admitted that they created Al-Qaeda, which they used in Afghanistan. Al-Qaeda is a Mossad CIA creation, and it also had help, shamefully, from the House of Saud. And one last thing I want to say, I am a Sunni Muslim. These so-called takfiris, these murderers and cold-blooded mercenaries who are in Syria, do not represent me as a Muslim. Mm. These people are not Islamic in any shape or form.
Yes.
And it's about time that we people in the Muslim world stop using the term Islamists. There's no such thing as an Islamist. We are either Muslims or we are not Muslims.
Yes, if I can just pick up on a few of your points. I mean, you make two points there about Al-Qaeda and sectarianism. On sectarianism, I'm with you 100%. I think it's a curse, and I think it is the most damaging thing that's happened to the Muslim world in recent history. It is a tool to divide us. It is untheological. Ultimately, these are questions that have been debated by greater minds than ours. And those greater minds than ours have already concluded that Shias are Muslims, that Sunnis are Muslims, and that we have differences. But ultimately, we come under the umbrella of Islam. And it's only a very conservative Islamic group that has been financed by petrodollars from a country that we shall name, Saudi Arabia, that has declared a lot of Muslims not to be Muslims. But ultimately, that little group would be nowhere without petrodollars. And that little group was ultimately assisted in its endeavors by the British and the Americans. And ultimately, that little group will disappear from the page of history as soon as the oil and the gas runs out. On Al-Qaeda, well, you know, I'm open to different opinions. Personally, I'm not convinced that Mossad and the CIA came up with a plan to create Al-Qaeda. What I think has happened is that they have redirected Al-Qaeda from its original aims, which was to fight the West and expel the West from Islamic lands. And they've now co-opted them and they're using them to fulfill their foreign policy goals. Maysoon, I'll allow you to come back quickly.
Yes, I'd like to correct you on a couple of things. First of all, the House of Saud are not Muslims, they're Wahhabis. Wahhabism is not an Islamic sect. Wahhabis originate from the old Judaic tribes that existed in Arabia. So, you know, I don't buy all that. Al-Qaeda, it was definitely, you should read more. You should investigate alternative thinking, Roshan. There are so many people now all over the world who are coming to the same conclusion. Al-Qaeda has never fought Israel. I want to ask you, why is that? Why hasn't Al-Qaeda ever attacked Israel for the sake of the Palestinians? These House of Saud Takfiris, what have they done for Palestinian people? They've done absolutely nothing. And the same with the Gulf Arabs. These people, yes, are governed by petrodollars. But these people are not true Muslims. These are Zionist Arabs. Well, and history has proven them to be Zionist Arabs.
Well, I think Maysoon, a lot of people will probably agree with you. Some might disagree with you. If you do disagree with Maysoon, please call in and we can talk about it. But one thing's for sure, the state of Israel could not have been founded without the state of Saudi Arabia being founded. That was a completely essential event to break up the Ottoman Empire as it was then, to divide Muslims, and then Israel can be created. We have Ogashua. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Apologies if I'm mispronouncing your name. You're in Nigeria. I'm not sure what you want to talk about, but go ahead.
Ogashua, I'll not get you. Hello. What I want to contribute for your day. Good day. Jim Galloway?
Sorry, I didn't get that, Ogashua. If you can...
I say, is John Galloway? Okay, good day. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not George Galloway. I'm Roshan Mohammed Saleh. George Galloway is a lot older than me and maybe a few pounds more, I'm not sure. But yeah, he's not here today and he'll be back next week. But anyway, Agashir, what's your point?
Okay. I will speak on Syria. What has happened on Syria? In fact, we, the best peace loving of this nation, we have to thank the Almighty God and thank the Arab nation that are sincere, not the destabilizing Arab nation like Saudi Arabia and the rest. The America and the West, they finance the terrorists. And then the insurgents, they are fighting each other now. The way they have fought each other, in fact, we are very, very grateful. And thank God, the hypocrisy that they are doing, their double standard that they have been doing, it has never suffered. Only imagine, it is our dismay. Many Nigerians complain about this. How can Saudi Arabia have a common interest with Israel so that they should frustrate the Muslim nation?
Okay.
It is unfaithful. So the truth now, the light against Bashar Assad that he has a chemical weapon, and by all of study, we learn that they are the ones that finance and give the insurgent chemical weapon.
Okay, so, Ogashua,
what we left now?
I'm going to cut you short just because the line's not great, and also we have other callers on the line. Thank you very much for your call from Nigeria. On Saudi Arabia, I think it's pretty obvious that Saudi Arabia intends to set the Middle East on fire at the moment. It's certainly funding groups in places like Lebanon and Syria who are literally causing havoc and chaos, destabilizing nations. They seem to be upset that they could not topple Bashar al-Assad. They seem to be upset that Iran Iran has done a deal over its nuclear program. They seem to be upset that they haven't managed to neutralize Hezbollah, and therefore they look like they're going for the Mad Max option, and that is to burn the whole house down. We have Lamine in Leeds. I think we dropped your call a little bit earlier on because not sure why, but Lamine, you're back and you want to talk about Egypt.
Yes, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Well, I don't understand, you know, it's we Muslims, you know, we pointing fingers to West all the time, yeah? So we Muslims, you know, I know West got interest. I know they got interest, but we God give us a gift, you understand? That is the truth, you understand? So, but Muslims, when you see a war in Iraq, in Libya, in Afghanistan, in Egypt, it's us Muslims, you understand? We cooperate with West, because some Muslims cooperate with West, and then we try to point fingers to West.
So you're saying, Lamine, that Muslims can have a bit of a victim mentality at times, and we blame the West and Israel for everything. We shouldn't be doing that. We should be looking in the mirror. Is that what you want to say?
That's what I'm trying to say, you know, because I understand West, they really got interest. This their interest. So West always keeps saying to other nations, sorry, every 25 years or every 50 years or every 10 years, West will come out and say to a nation, we are sorry. Since the memorial time, from slavery to down, they keep saying sorry, sorry, sorry. You understand? But we Muslims, we don't follow God. We don't follow what Allah says to us, you know, you understand? So we only follow these petrol things, you know, how to build our nations. Listen, Palestinians are suffering. We don't even send no money in Palestinians.
Yes.
Only chicken change. Imagine the richest nation in the world is from West. You know, they have a lot of resources, but no.
Well,
I think
a lot of the Persian Gulf countries could, you know, solve the situation in Gaza, the dire humanitarian situation in Gaza, by you know, giving Gaza billions of dollars in humanitarian aid. But instead of that, they want to, you know, build the biggest, tallest building in the world and have the biggest Disneyland in the world. A case of misplaced priorities, perhaps. But I think it's interesting what you say. Ultimately, I agree with you to a certain extent that we can, you know, kind of divert from our own problems and our own deficiencies by blaming the West for everything. I think the West is a massive player on the block. I think the West has deliberately destabilized the Arab and Muslim world for many years. It's all very well documented. So we cannot ignore what the West has done. And ultimately, if we don't resist the West and we don't resist Israel in the Middle East, then ultimately we will be the losers. But at the same time, you know, I think it's a fair point that perhaps we are our own worst enemies. We do not learn from history, and ultimately if we don't learn the lessons from history, then things ain't going to get better in the future. Abdi is in Toronto, Canada, and you're on the line, Abdi, live on air on Comment on Press TV. Please make your point, Abdi.
Hello,
Abdi, go ahead and make your points.
Yes, salam alaikum, first of all.
Walaikum
I agree
salam.
With the lady that was speaking earlier about what Al-Qaeda has ever
Maysoon.
Done for Palestine, which is zero. Me, as a Sunni Muslim, I believe that Al-Qaeda itself was created, this is a known fact, by the CIA, right? Everybody knows this, just like everybody knows that Al-Qaeda, if they were ever behind the 9/11 attacks, means that the U.S. government was behind 9/11 attacks. This is facts that I've come to conclude myself. But I want to talk about Egypt in particular, because I've been watching the situation in Egypt. And what I've come to know is that Egypt, for a slight moment, we believed would see the light, you know, and this I mean by some sort of a freedom for the people of Egypt and throughout the Arab and Muslim world. I predict a gloomy future for Egypt if this Sisi guy, who has the almost over 2,500,000 Egyptian people's blood on his hand, he should be going to the International Community Court and facing charges.
Sisi would say in response to that, that ultimately what he did was avert a civil war by cracking down on the Muslim Brotherhood. And do you think there's any veracity, any truth to that?
There's no truth to that at all. They've overthrown and elected the first democratic election of Egypt. You see, the sad thing is the Western country, particularly the U.S., has portrayed democracy to the world, right? I've seen a sad picture on Facebook, a freedom group that said Iraq before democracy, a picture that was very beautiful, and after democracy, which was the invasion of the U.S., which was terrifying and blood and all over the place. So I believe, I honestly believe that if Sisi goes to election, which is going to be a rigged vote, he's going to win 100%, and that Morsi, even though, you know, he didn't complete. Some people say he was bad and all that. I think that he should have been given the five-year term that he was elected
yes.
for, because you can't get nothing done in a year. Otherwise, Egypt will have civil war and become a failed
yeah,
state.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't very impressed with how the Muslim Brotherhood handled their year in power. There's no doubt that they deserved more time to, try and improve their record. What you have in Egypt is a polarized nation. You have many Muslim Brotherhood supporters, you have many secularists, you have many minorities as well. And the problem is that they don't seem to be able to coexist. They want to try and wipe each other out. But literally, you can't wipe out vast swathes of your population without creating severe problems for the future. So my hope for Egypt is that these differing groups in the country can agree to disagree to a certain extent and find a way of coexisting with each other. Abdi in Toronto, thank you very much for your call. Much appreciated. We're now going to go to Hadi, who is in Iran. And Hadi, welcome to comment. You want to talk about Egypt. Go ahead, Hadi.
Yes, I just wanted to remark on the guy Max that called from the U.S., and he was talking about Egypt.
Yeah, go ahead, Hadi. Make your point.
Yeah, he was talking about Egypt, and he was mentioning that the people in Egypt just had two choices between Morsi and the other guy. But I want to disagree with him first. Of course, I wanna make a very important point that Morsi, he committed very big mistakes, especially on his foreign policy, especially the one towards Syria. That was the very, very big mistake that he and his brotherhood done. But that doesn't mean that they deserve to be slaughtered, you know?
Yes.
Let me make it this way. There were five candidates against Morsi, and Morsi won. Either we like it or not, he was an elected president.
You have to accept that, yes.
So, yeah, and either we like it or not, the majority of people in Egypt, they voted for him. That's first. Second, I very much disagree with. I hear about a lot of things going on in the media about the military, new government in Egypt, and you know, let me just give you this fact: Saudi Arabia that is funding the war on Syria is the same government that is helping Sisi and his government in Egypt. That is a fact. You know, if you want to know where God is, look where the devil is, you know? That is a fact that we have to look up to and think about. And let's not be naive. It was the plan from the beginning. When the U.S., they saw that there was a revolution happening in Egypt, what they did is this. They brought the brother, they let the brotherhood come to power in order to calm down the people.
Yes.
And then they had this plan. It was like bring them to power for a year, use them in Syria, and then get rid of them. That was the plan.
Yeah, you know, very kind of interesting points that you make, Hadi. I think many people would agree with what you're saying. The choice in Egypt really, you know, it's between a bad law and another bad law, isn't it? Really, really difficult. But we're going to have to wind up the show now because that's all the time we have today. Thanks to all of you who called in. Some excellent calls tonight. George Galloway will be back in the hot seat next week. So it's goodbye from me, Roshan Mohammed Saleh, for now. Bye-bye. See you.
Hello, just comment your name on the page, please, that's my number. And just make sure that your television volume is set to 0.
0, 0. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know. You redirect it to the phone number, and then we'll be back.